When we're talking about the electric transmission grid in the United States, we're talking about a couple of different components. One is the what we used to call the high tension lines, the high voltage lines that take power from large central power plants and bring them to the cities or to the load centers, as we're calling them. Then there are substations that take the voltage up from the power plant to high voltage and then down at the local distribution center. Then there's the local grid, the distribution grid, which is the one that brings the power to your home. And then you've also got your internal house grid, which you kind of forget about, that wires your house and all the appliances and connects it. Generally, when we're talking about the smart grid, we're talking about the combination of both the transmission grid and the distribution grid, all of the transformers, the switching equipment, the control equipment, the monitoring equipment, and the measuring equipment, and all of the software that deals with it. So it's a very complex piece of technology. The North American electric grid, probably the most complex things has been devised by man.
Now, when we hear discussion of new sources of energy, windmills and, well, I guess nuclear is not the issue so much, but windmills and alternative forms, hydroelectric,
solar.
Yeah, that's the one. Thank you. You hear those discussions in conjunction with talking about the grid. What is the issue with renewable sources, the alternate sources of energy, and the grid versus just the coal plants and the nuclear plants that now sit on the grid?
The issue is this. The large, there are two different, when you're talking about renewable energy, we're talking about the two ends of the grid. At one end, we're talking about building large solar farms and large windmill farms. Large solar farms where there are great amounts of sun in the southwest. Large windmill farms maybe in the upper plains, the Midwest, the mountains. And then the necessity to bring wires to those large arrays. And so generally the wind is available and the sun is available where people aren't living. So you're going to need long transmission lines to bring the Great Plains wind power to Chicago, to bring the Nevada and California desert solar power to Los Angeles. We also have wind and solar distributed. You could put solar panels on top of your house. You could put a small wind turbine maybe in a local community, and that power enters the grid from the other end. If you have excess power, if you produce more power on from your solar panels than you need in your house, you'd like to be able, and we'd like to put that in the local grid.
So
that
you
makes
need
it
some
very
sort
complicated.
Of, you need a mechanism to measure that and
you
to
need
keep
measurement,
track of it.
You need control, and you need balancing. The challenge of an electric grid is to constantly keep in balance. Even today, if we turn off the lights in here, the electric power plant has to back off, because there's no place for that power to go. And so as we're constantly turning off lights, or more really, as the temperature changes and our air conditioners kick in and kick off, as our refrigerators kick in and kick off, they are sending signals back to central power stations to back off or add power. If we also complicate that by putting power in at our end of the grid, where now the wind blows at our house and we have excess power and we put it into the grid, we'll need new communications, new balancing, maybe some batteries, measurement, storage, all of that. Layered on top of that is what we'd like to have is a grid that's smart and tells us when power is expensive so we cannot use it, and when power is cheap so we can buy it and maybe store it. That's the combination.
We're talking with Branko Terzic. He is with Deloitte Energy Services, LP, and a former Federal Energy Regulatory Commissioner. Rita, did you have a question?
Well, yeah, I was thinking, given that this is one of the really high priorities for our president, and it's been almost a little under 30 days since he signed the stimulus into law. Have you seen any of that stimulus money that's been allocated for the different energy efficiency ideas out there? Have you seen that money hit yet?
I don't think the money is out there yet. There is a huge job to be done by the Department of Energy and many other agencies of the government. Number one, as you know, after legislation is passed, there need to be some rules. So then some interpretation. There is that process, the rulemaking process. The legislation does have One source says up to $30 billion for a combination of smart grid, advanced battery, and energy efficiency in buildings and schools. There's directly $4.3 billion allocated to the DOE to help and make investments in smart grid, and they'll be doing such things also as having studies of the architecture of the grid, communication standards, how to monitor and manage the load on the grid, what kind of technology, advanced components, modeling and simulation of the grid. It's estimated that that $4 billion in the next 2 years would bring about 75,000 jobs even in the first year. And there's $100 million of smart grid-related worker training, $80 million in assessment. There's $10 million going to our National Institute of Standards and Technologies to develop new standards. And so that money is just now working its way, and it's going to be a tremendous task by our colleagues in federal government to get a handle on that, to write the rules, administer the grants. They know how difficult it is. I've been at state and federal government. I've been through this in the early 80s. I was state public service commissioner in Wisconsin when we did low-income energy assistance, when we did conservation, energy efficiency loans. And, you know, you don't always have as many good projects available as you have money for.
And there's so one other issue,
it's
too.
It's a tough
I'm sure you've dealt with this one when you were at the state level especially, and that is the NIMBY effect. You mentioned earlier that there's the need for new lines, new grid, new wiring to be built from wherever we build these new alternative sources to the places where the power is distributed. And nobody wants to see, in fact, nobody wants to even see windmills, let alone power lines. And we're not entirely sure people want to see giant solar arrays in their backyard. And Senator Reid has thinking about introducing legislation that would simply say the federal government can overrule locals when it comes to siting some of these facilities. How do we overcome the NIMBY effect other than the heavy hand of the government just stomping on localities?
Well, common sense would be some education, explaining to people the importance and the safety of much of this equipment. There's a lot of misinformation there about what is and isn't safe and what is and isn't dangerous. Keep in mind, though, the states have always had for electric power transmission lines eminent domain. So if it's been in the electric grid that we have now was built with the states giving the rights to electric utilities to have eminent domain, and many of the lines were built over the objections of local citizens who felt the line should go somewhere else. But so the states have always had federal eminent domain. At the federal level, all the interstate natural gas pipelines and oil lines have been built with federal eminent domain. The 2005 Act extended some limited jurisdiction of the Federal Energy Commission over expanding transmission in certain designated corridors after the states have turned it down then. So we do have some federal role, but the notion that of eminent domain, that somebody could order you to take your property and compensate you fairly, that's embedded in the U.S. Constitution, and that we've had that for years. That's how we have our highways, our roads, our schools. And, you know, that's how we build public infrastructure. It's unfortunate a few individuals are inconvenienced, but it's for the public good.